Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Good morning, friends. So the theme this morning is ancestors. We've just done this two ancestors memorial. I want to start by acknowledging that this has been a little bit of a daunting task to think about doing the first formal Dharma talk after Kyogen's passing. It's very, very clear to me that I cannot fill his shoes. So I must fill my own, and that is my task. And the theme of the day really fits very well with this whole business of ancestry. The lifespan chapter that we chanted, I wanted to do this whole sort of scholarly research. I did some research on it, trying to figure out, you know, what I could say about how it fits with Eike Dogen and Josai Kazan. There we go. But in the end, I thought, well, I'll just do a very quick little reference to it. So I went to one of my favorite Dharma sources, Wikipedia. And here's what it says about the Lotus Sutra. This sutra is known for its extensive instruction on the concept and usage of skillful means, the seventh paramita or perfection of a bodhisattva, mostly in the form of parables. It is also one of the first sutras to use the term Mahayana or great vehicle Buddhism. Another concept introduced by the Lotus Sutra is the idea that the Buddha is an eternal entity who achieved nirvana eons ago, but willingly chose to remain in the cycle of rebirth, samsara, to help teach beings the Dharma time and again. He reveals himself as the father of all beings and evinces the loving care of just such a father. Moreover, the sutra indicates that even after the parinirvana, the apparent physical death of the Buddha, that Buddha continues to be real and to be capable of communicating with the world. So I thought I would talk a little bit this morning about lineage, about what it is and why it matters. I sent Kaishin this nice little email yesterday when I was working on this talk saying, oh, and we need to make sure we're chanting the traditional line today and not the women's line, because I'm going to be talking about the traditional line. And it wasn't until this morning that it dawned on me, we're not going to be reciting any lines this morning. That's not part of this ceremony. Oh, well. But typically, we would recite either the traditional ancestral line or the line of women Dharma ancestors. The traditional line is one that we've recited for many, many years, and the women's line is one that we have added more recently based on some research done by many of the women in the United States, our own Jiko being one of those who wrote this wonderful book about it, Women of the Way. So when we begin studying the precepts, the very first paragraph of the Kyoju Kaiman, or the little booklet that says the 16 Bodhisattva precepts, is, the great precepts of the Buddhas are kept carefully by the Buddhas. Buddhas give them to Buddhas, Dharma ancestors give them to Dharma ancestors. The transmission of the precepts is beyond the three existences of past, present, and future. Enlightenment ranges from time eternal and is even now. Shakyamuni, the Buddha of this world, transmitted the precepts to Makakasho, and he transmitted them to Ananda. Thus they have been transmitted down through the generations. This is the meaning of the transmission of living wisdom. So the line that we recite actually starts before Shakyamuni Buddha, who is considered the Buddha of this world. So before that, there are six Buddhas that are somewhat mythological, or that maybe they are mythological. But Shakyamuni Buddha himself is somewhat mythological in the way that we think of him. So there are many stories about his whole life and how he, you know, his birth and all of the stuff, which is very interesting stories and instructive for us to study his life. We don't know that it happened that way. It was a very, very, very long time ago, and many people have told lots and lots of stories about it. Does that make it not true? Hard to say, really. It's hard to say. Kyogen used to talk about myth and how it has its own truth and how we use that truth in our lives in many ways. So the seven answers, so we start off with the seven, six or seven Buddhas of the past. And then we have a line of Indian ancestors. So the tradition is that the Dharma is passed from teacher to student, face to face, and that the teacher recognizes when the student has it, when the student is actually embodying the Dharma. And so we have this line that continues on down. In India, the ancestor, the last ancestor we chant in India is Hanyatara or Prajnatara, who told Bodhidharma, go to China, as the story goes. So Bodhidharma did, went to China, and had to do some figuring out of how to bring Buddhism to China. Now, there had already been some Buddhism there. People had sort of heard about this thing, and there were sutras being studied and various things. But Bodhidharma found a way to present it. He was like, okay, I got to get it down to its essence. Found a way to present it so that the people, his students then could turn it into a Chinese version of Zen, and or of Buddhism, Chan, actually. So it was the birth of Zen, in a way. Then we have a whole line of Chinese ancestors who kind of continue to flower that and help it to grow. And then at some point, it sort of started migrating to Japan. And again, it had been around in Japan for a while before Dogen, who actually studied with several teachers of Buddhism, at some point said, well, this isn't quite it. I think I'm going to go to China and see if I can get the real deal. So he travels to China, wanders around there, talks to various people, and finally meets his teacher there, his true teacher, who gives him the real deal. And at that point, he says, okay, this is what I'm going to take back to Japan. So he goes to Japan, founds his own monastery. He's not interested in working with huge numbers of people. He's interested in talking about what is this thing called, whatever it's called, Buddhism, and how do we manifest it in our own lives in a very deep way. And four generations later, Keizan came along and broadened the appeal to many more people. And then so then that flourished and spread in Japan. And then so we have a whole line of Japanese ancestors. And then not so very long ago, we have Jiyu Kennett, who was an Englishwoman who happened to see Kato Chisan as he was traveling around. And Kato Chisan was a pretty high mucky-muck priest in Japan, the head of the training order at Sochiji. And he was traveling around the country, and he came to England, the story goes, and says to her, come and train with me. And eventually she does that, which is pretty difficult. She was a woman, she was a foreigner, she was on the wrong side of the war that had not been that far long ago. And yet somehow she persevered, was transmitted, came to the United States, founded Shasta Abbey, where our teachers then studied. They came here, and we now have this temple in a cafeteria, but it is still a temple, and we have this new temple being built. So that's kind of the line that we chant. We go back to Shakyamuni Buddha and even before, and then we come up through our current teachers, and here we are. So I thought, oh, I'll talk a little bit more about Dogen and Keizan, and I will do a little bit of that, but not nearly as much. I had this whole thought of, oh, I can do all this sort of scholarly research and it'll be really cool. And I'm doing a little bit of it, but you're just getting a little taste of some of the stuff that, you know, it could be. So I went to Keizan's monastic standards, and he talks about the annual ceremonies, and lo and behold, the very first one in the fall is Ehei Dogen's Memorial Day. And this is what he says about it. I'm just excerpting pieces from it because the whole thing starts, he's talking about some stuff that we don't do and things that don't make a lot of sense. So I'm excerpting some of it, but it's recognizable. He says, there will be the offering of alms by relaying through the hands of individual residents, incense offerings, and veneration. When the abbot kneels down before the incense burner, the official of discipline begins to read the words of tribute. And these are the words of tribute, again, somewhat revised and excerpted. On this 28th day of the month, the ancient memorial day of the Master Eihei, the first patriarch of the Soto Zen in Japan, we have respectfully prepared a humble offering of incense and flowers, coarse tea, and chanted the sacred sutra. The great merit accrued therefrom is dedicated to the great Master Eihei, and thereby intended to discharge our indebtedness to the Dharma, spiritual nourishment, which has transmitted to us. Pondering the foregoing matter privately in heart, we see Toan's water flow in reverse, causing the great waves of the gigantic ocean to make thunderous sounds. And Oryu, yellow dragon, throws lightning bolts at the clouds and rain spreading over the entire moistened sky. The single drop of Tozan's original water is patched, and its sectarian stream spread in prominence. The two stalks of the young cassia, under the protective shade, developed thickly grown branches and lineages. There is none of the traditions of the five families of Zen that is not represented in his Zen, and the essentials of the seven Zen branches are all included in his teaching. Obviously, he's talking about Dogen here. He learned the masters renowned in the imperial courts of Japan and China, and widely read the Buddhist and non-Buddhist, as well as exoteric and esoteric sutras and teachings. He was the hero that appears once in 100 generations and the model through the ages of the millennium of the past. Indeed, such was the founding master of Eihei, the most original patriarch in the country of Japan. Having illumined the entire heaven, he was endowed with supreme power of vision brighter than that of the sun and moon. Having touched the entire universe, he turned the wheel of the Dharma that is superior to Kakravartin's golden wheel. Now, I looked up the note of this golden wheel, and it explains that this golden wheel has 1,000 spokes that belongs to the mythological king of ancient India, Kakravartin. Whenever this wheel turns in midair to proceed, there the mythological king was always victorious, even without a battle. Obviously a very powerful wheel. So that was a little piece of what Keizan prescribed to be done and read for the Eihei Memorial. And I think a few elements of those you can recognize in our ceremony this morning. I'm going to shift gears a little bit and read from Kyogen's book, Zen and the American Grain. He has a very brief little chapter on remembrance. This book came out in 94, so it's been a while. And I understand it's actually out of print at this point. You can still find copies sometimes. Some time ago, a Zen Center member came to tell us that a woman he was very close to had been killed in an accident. There was to be a remembrance gathering at the school where she had been a faculty member. Although she had been very close to the Zen Center member, most of us had met her only once, quite briefly. Listening to students, faculty, and old friends remark upon the effects she had had on their lives, I perceived something in a new light. I never really knew her, yet I could see and feel the effect her life had on these people. I think it can be said that the truest measure of the human heart is the impression it leaves on those it has touched. In the early years at the monastery, when we were building the first stretch of cloister between the abbot's quarters and the main house, we found that there were 2 cherry trees directly in the path of the structure. At the time, the trees were very ill, and it was doubtful whether they would last much longer. But in debating what to do, it was decided to build the cloister around the trees and connect to the main house in a way other than originally planned. In so doing, we created a little nook formed by the cloister wall. As it turned out, the trees recovered and came back as strong as ever. It struck me, though, at the time, that when those trees do die, the nook in the cloister will remain as a tribute to their having been there and to the way we felt about them. I think it's the same way with people. When someone who is close to us leaves this world, It is like removing a press mold from wet clay. The impression left upon us by all the ways they touched us is the truest measure of their having lived. In Life After Life by Raymond Moody, it is revealed that people who have near-death experiences report that they are asked a question as they approach death that amounts to, "What have you done with your life?" They also report that this question has nothing to do with what they have built or accumulated, but with how they have touched other living things. When facing the great matter of life and death, all questions dissolve into one fundamental question, and this is the essential point of religion. And yet, it is in the manner that we live our everyday lives, in all the myriad details and choices that we make, that we put the religious life to the test. It is here that we touch and affect other people. It was so very clear to me at this remembrance gathering that this had been a person whose heart was full and good, and that she lived on in the hearts of those she touched. When faced with death, we suddenly gain perspective on what matters. We reflect upon how fragile life is, and for a moment, we remember, love, and respect all those who have touched our lives. It is an excellent meditation to consider how we ourselves would like to be remembered when our own time comes. I picked up this book thinking I would like to read something from him, and that was the first article I saw, and I thought, perfect. So thinking about Kyogen and some of his accomplishments, and this is just my own list, it's not a definitive list by any means, things that I have seen. So with Gyokuko, he created and nurtured this Sangha and its growth. Now obviously, Dharma Rain had been around a little bit, I think, before they got here, but it wasn't like this. It has definitely grown a great deal over the years. I remember that after his father died, he was provided that, and one of the things he did was to turn his attention to the future. He was determined that this would outlive him, that it would go on after he died. And what I saw him doing was working on helping other people express the Dharma, gradually bringing more and more voices in to do Dharma talks, because he had done almost all of the Dharma talks for several years. And he's brilliant at giving Dharma talks. We all appreciate it when he does. But he started nurturing other people and allowing and encouraging other people to bring their voices to this seat. And it enriched all of us. It was enriching to hear other voices, and it was... It's useful when we have to find that way to express the Dharma for ourselves. There have been a lot more teachers developed over the last several years, so that we now have a wealth of teachers. Another thing he did was he supported and actually, I would say, initiated and then supported this interfaith dialogue with evangelical Christians, which came out of a personal friendship with Paul Metzger. Two people on very opposite sides of many divides, political, religious divides that we somehow think, social divides that we somehow think are real. And the two of them found that they could actually respect and see each other and talk with each other and as human beings. And they wanted to encourage other people to do that, to continue that. So we have an ongoing interfaith dialogue with these folks. That is still happening and is still enriching both the evangelical Christians and many of the people here. Many of us have gotten great benefit from participating in this. He has supported prison work unfailingly. And I was reflecting on the fact that the women that I work with in prison have never met Kyogen. And yet, they have been touched by him. They know me, and through me they know something of him. But he was the one who suggested that I might be interested in prison work. And I said, sure, let's do it. And has supported me all the way through. And so now we have a prison program that is many volunteers. I think at last count there were like 11 or 12 volunteers going into 7 or 8 institutions, I lose count, and on a pretty regular basis. And we are now beginning to do more with transition, with people who are leaving prison. How do we support those folks? So we're kind of working on that. And he was a staunch supporter of that program. The children's program we think of as being Gyokuko's baby, and yet he has always supported and appreciated that program. And as a Sangha, we have dedicated our resources to it and have continued it in many ways. It has become a model for all over the country. People have come here saying, how do you do this? How can we do something like that? And there are more and more and more children's programs all over the country in Buddhist organizations. So that is something that has touched many lives who will never know Kyogen or Gyokuko for that matter. Siskiyou, our new temple, our new grounds, our new property, our new building. It looks like something that we're building, doesn't it? It looks like a thing. And yet, what is it for? What is it for? It is for us to continue this work of the Dharma, of expressing the Dharma, of bringing it to people who can continue to express that and bring it forward. Again, this sometimes looks like Kakamyo's project. Or it might look like Gyokuko's project. Or it might look like this belongs to the ordained or the residents. And it's really not the case. Kyogen was behind it all the way from the beginning. And of course, all of us, almost all of us, have been out there, have done something to contribute to this. It is our project. And I think one of Kyogen's strengths was always doing that, bringing us all together and having it be a collective thing, not just from him, not just from Kakamyo, not just from Gyokuko, not from any of us in particular, but from all of us together. I want to mention Soto Zen Buddhist Association. He is a past president of the Soto Zen Buddhist Association. One of the things that's forefront in my mind is because the ordained will be leaving for the biennial conference on Wednesday to go and spend 4 days at Great Vow Zen Monastery at Klatskanai to celebrate this. There are now, they had to cap the registration this year at over 100 priests coming from all over the country. It's going to be a zoo. It's going to be wild out there. But he's been instrumental in that organization, and also the American Zen Teachers Association. So he's known nationally by many people who have experienced his leadership in that arena. Finally, I want to talk about my last Sanzen with him. We usually don't talk that much about our own Sanzen, but I wanted to share something of that with y'all. The last morning, which was that last Thursday morning, a week and a half ago, right before he died, he did Zazen with us, and he offered Sanzen. And Joshin and I both took advantage of that and went and spoke with him. I was thinking about term vows because we were just getting ready to do the term student program, and I knew that my overall vow was going to be about compassion. But I was looking for something in the way of a specific practice to do in connection with that, and of course I could think of a few, but nothing was quite coming together for me. So he asked me a few questions about that and finally suggested, well, just find a way to be kind to someone every day. Do something kind for someone every day. I thought, that makes sense. Yeah, that fits pretty well. And so I've been thinking about that quite a bit, and of course I've had many opportunities to be kind to people in the last week and a half. And then a few days ago it occurred to me, he said something after that. He said, let me know how it goes. Now, how am I supposed to do that? And yet, that was one of the kindest things that he could have said. It says he cares about me, that he wants to know how things are going for me. And I think somehow he'll know. Couldn't tell you how, but somehow I think that that's true. So very shortly after that, he got up and left the Zendo. And he went out to the property. Now, Gyokuko says that he was doing something in particular out there. I somehow think he was taking a last look at the property, seeing the reality, it is happening. Sort of being reassured that, yes, this is definitely a happening thing. That's just my feeling about it. I have no way to guarantee any of that, but that's my feeling about it. And a couple hours later, we got the shocking news that he had died. We went to the hospital, the four of us ordained, and a couple other people managed to get there for the service. We have a whole system set up, thanks to Bukai, who years ago did the Joju project. So we have a box that has all of the stuff you need to do the bedside ceremony. We have a portable altar. It took us a little bit of scrambling to go and find all these things. Some of it was in short-term storage, and you know, this business about being in a transition is pretty interesting. But we got it, and we got it to the hospital. We spent the day at the hospital. Gyokuko said it's very important for people to have this opportunity to spend time with the body. So we have this intimacy with our teacher and with each other. Very important for us to see it, to share this experience with each other, to grieve with each other, to hold each other, and gradually come to acceptance of this new reality. And we spent the day basically doing that. And there were times during the day that I thought, it's such a tribute to Kyogen that we have this incredible Sangha, that we can do this together, and that we can all come together in love. And it was quite touching. And now it's our turn to take our place in the lineage. So Kyogen is now being chanted at the end of our traditional ancestral line. His name is now there. The first time we did it, I think all of us lost it. I had to then do an echo, an offertory that had lots of tears in it. But we got through it, we did it, and we are gradually accepting that this is the case. When we do Jukai and we get the Ketchum Yaku, which is the bloodline of the ancestors, it's a red line, and it has to do with, this is a bloodline that we are in. This is not a clan of adoption. This is a blood family that we have entered by accepting the precepts and by taking Jukai. And so at the bottom of that line is the name of your teacher, the preceptor, and then it's your name that says new ancestor. So right in that moment, we have the past. It's all there. It's all laid out for us. All of these ancestors who have given their lives to make sure that we have the opportunity to take the precepts. And now, each of us is now a new ancestor. It's right there. So we have the past and we have the future, and it comes together right now, right here. Right now. So we honor the Buddha by taking our own seat in this place in the lineage. We honor the Dharma by continuing to explore it in our own lives. And we honor the Sangha by exploring it together, by learning from each other, teaching each other, and allowing it to hold all of us. I'm going to go to Dogen, and it is a poem that he wrote. It's a little bit on the long side, but I couldn't help it. I kept trying to convince myself I should just read a little bit of it, or I should not do it, and I couldn't talk myself out of it, so you all get to hear it. 15 verses on dwelling in the mountains. How delightful, mountain dwelling, so solitary and tranquil. Because of this, I always read the Lotus Blossom Sutra. With wholehearted vigor under trees, what is there to love or hate? How enviable, sound of evening rains in deep autumn. The ancestral way came from the west, I transmit east. polishing the moon, cultivating clouds, I long for the ancient wind. How could red dusts from the mundane world fly up to here? Snowy night in the deep mountains in my grass hut. Sitting as the night gets late, sleep not yet arrived, evermore I realize engaging the way is best in mountain forests. Sound of valley streams enters my ears, moonlight pierces my eyes. Other than this, not a thought's in my mind. When I love mountains, mountains love their master. For rocks big and small, how can the way cease? White clouds and yellow leaves await their time and season. Already discarded are the nine mundane streams. Grasping source of clouds and passing through water barriers, my face opens in reference as the mountain face displays flowers. Clearly realizing the promise from beginningless kalpas, mountains love the master, and I enter the mountains. Staying in mountains, I gradually awaken to mountain sounds and colors. Fruit growing and flowers open, I question release from emptiness. For a while, I've wondered, what is the original color? Blue, yellow, red, and white are all in the painting. For a long while, I've abandoned human realms beyond attachments, writing with brush and inkstone already discarded. Seeing flowers and hearing birdsong brings little attraction, though dwelling in mountains, I'm still ashamed at my lack of talent. How sad my faded picture of a figure. Although over time my eyes and ears have blurred, there is something difficult to let go and easy to soak in. At night in my grass hut, sound of autumn rain and valley streams. At dusk in late autumn, the weather becomes cool. Chirping insects under crescent moon bring many feelings. Late in the quiet night, I gaze up at the Big Dipper. As dawn approaches, it slides toward the east. A 6-meter square thatched hut is filled with coolness. Fragrant autumn chrysanthemums can hardly deceive my nose. How could iron eyes and brass pupils be decayed? In Echizen, I've seen the double yang 9 times. Towers in front and pavilions behind stand splendid. On the peak is a stupa of 5 or 6 levels. Under the moon, in cool autumn wind, a crane sleeps standing. The robe is transmitted at midnight to a monk in Zazen. The evening bell rings in moonlight and lanterns are raised. Training monks sit in the hall and quietly observe emptiness. Having fortunately attained the 3 robes, now they plant seeds. How heartwarming their ripening liberation in the one mind. Grasshopper thinking and insect chirping, how earnest. Soft breeze and hazy moon are both calm. Clouds envelop pines and cedars round the old hall by the pond. By the mountain temple, autumn raindrops fall on the empress tree. Setting up a lamp and holding a brush, I wish to speak my heart. From a distance, I yearn for India and traces of the founding ancestor. Our Buddha's transmission of the robe commenced this cold valley, solitary not only in winter at Mount Song's Shaolin Temple. In a grass hut in the deep mountains and valleys, contemplation in Zazen cannot be exhausted. Add even a speck of dust to the high peak of merit, the Tathagata's disciples wish for divine power. And there's a note at the very last part of this where Dogen talks about divine or supernatural power in terms of the virtue of everyday activity. Very last thing I'm going to do is sing. This is a song from a completely different tradition, from Sweet Honey in the Rock, which is a cappella group of African-American women. And the song has been in my head ever since Kyogen died. So I have to share it with you. It's called Breaths. Listen more often to things than to beings. Listen more often to things than to beings. Tis the ancestors' words when voice is heard. Tis the ancestors' words in the voice of the water. Those who have died have never left. The dead are not under the earth. They are in the rustling trees. They are in the groaning woods. They are in the crying grass. They are in the moaning rocks. The dead are not under the earth. So listen more often to things than to beings. Listen more often to things than to beings. Tis the ancestors' words when the fire's voice is heard. Tis the ancestors' words in the voice of the water. Those who have died have never left. The dead have a pact with the living. They are in the woman's breast. They are in the wailing child. They are with us in the home. They are with us in the crowd. The dead have a pact with the living. So listen more often to things than to beings. Listen more often to things than to beings. Tis the ancestors' words when the fire's voice is heard. Tis the ancestors' words in the voice of the water. Comments or questions? The floor is open.
Richard over there.
I would just like to thank you for a wonderful talk. I think Kyogen would be very proud.
Thank you for your talk, Dinko. I wanted to share one of the other really profound influences and ways that Kyogen has touched so many people is through his support of lay teachers and lay practice. Yes. You may not know that, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, he encouraged JICO to help get the Lay Zen Teachers Association formulated. And so there was a founding group, I think about 6 years ago. And many, many groups across the country have looked towards Dharma Rain, and our model of integrating lay practice and honoring lay practice and the ordained and how we function so seamlessly together. And it was his voice and his support that really, really powerfully influenced practice across the country. And its influence isn't always seen here, because it's just what we do. You know, right. It's just how we are. Yeah. I went to my first Lay Zen Teachers Association conference 2 years ago, and I came back with this wide open heart of gratitude for the opportunities that have been given to us through both Kyogen and Gyokuko's vision of what can be expressed in lay life together with ordained. And it's beautiful how it's married and supports each other. And when JICO posted to the Lay Zen Teachers Association that Kyogen had passed, the condolences came pouring in, just pouring in. Such heartfelt gratitude for his life. So
thank you so much for bringing that up. I knew there was no way to cover it all, which is why I did that little caveat at the beginning. This is what I'm seeing at the moment.
Yes.
So thank you. Yes. Yes. It is truly extraordinary what we do here compared with a lot of places. And there, his leadership is allowing that model to then show up or at least be influenced in other temples, which is wonderful. I think we have Daicho here.
Thank you for your talk and the song. Wow. This is probably I could have said in a circle, but your talk just reminded me that Kyogen and Paul Metzger from Mount Noma Bible Seminary initiated this dialogue between evangelical Christians and us Buddhists, and it's still going on, and we had some delay, but we finally decided the dates. It's going to be Fridays. The first one is October 10th, I think, and it's going to be potluck, and probably several times, roughly every month, except January. And Kyogen, last year, he was just too busy to participate in any of those. But this year, I even hesitated to email him about it, but I did it anyway, just, you know, told him that, well, it's happening, and he said, well, which day? And I said, well, Fridays, and he said, oh, good. So he was actually, you know, trying to come to some of those, and I knew his schedule was always kind of crazy, so I was surprised and happy about that. And that was 2 days before his passing.
Right.
So I went to convey that, and if somebody here is interested, talk to me. It's not recommended for somebody who just started it, Buddhism, but if you have some, you know, some sure-footed foot feet on the ground, it's a good opportunity. It's very friendly, good food, mm-hmm. and good talk.
Their food improved quite a lot after the beginning, once they figured out we really were vegetarian and that didn't have to be, you know, awful.
Thank you.
Let's see, that's it back there. It's kind of this side of the room is really going to town here.
Thank you for sharing so intimately with us, Genko. I really appreciate it. Sort of in commiseration with you, we went through the memorial last week, both our ceremony here and then the main funeral, and it was really like the full meal deal of grief for the entire day for all of us who went through that. The next day I was in a yoga class, and I usually go about 9:30 every morning, and the teacher who usually taught that class was away at a training, and another teacher who I also go see a lot was there, and she was just kind of introducing the class and introducing herself to as a substitute to people who didn't know her, and I was still kind of feeling the weight of the previous day. And at one point she said, well, this is an opportunity to not be attached to teachers. And
oh, wow.
As you can imagine, I nearly lost it. I didn't, because I didn't need to put off what my experience was on her, who had no idea what I'd been going through. And that's something Kyogen taught me.
Yeah.
Not that I have to be secretive about my grief or what I'm going through, but I don't need to take it out on people.
Right.
And I went for it with the class, because she's actually a very good teacher, and I enjoy her very much as a friend also. And in a way, I think that was a bit of the cause and effect of Kyogen sort of poking me, going, see?
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 See? Yeah, you can see him doing that. Suzanne?
You know, I didn't know that Gyokako had specifically requested that people be invited to come to the hospital that day. And I was surprised when I was invited, and it was very, very touching to me. And I have never had that experience before. Now, that's maybe unusual for somebody my age, but I have never been in the hospital room or in a room with somebody who has just died. And it gave me a lot of peace. It was, and also I noticed how soft the Sangha was. Mm. And I had a fabulous hug with you and with Gyokako, with all of the many of you who were there. And for me, that was Kyogen's last opportunity to teach, to touch me, to teach me. So it was really very beautiful, and I thank you.
I think it's really true that for a lot of us, one person told me this is the first time she had ever touched a dead body. And I think that's true for many of us, that death is something that happens outside of our view, and it's sort of this mysterious, scary thing. I know I went through this when my partner died, about how profound it was simply to be there, to simply sit with the body, to take in the fact that it was no longer moving. You know, you kept looking for the little finger twitches or the chest rising and falling, wasn't there. And just to kind of take that in and just really accept that that's the case. It seems like kind of a small thing, but it's incredibly profound. And most of us don't have that opportunity a lot in our lives. And so we found that this was very important to have that open, to really have that be out there, and as a way of teaching. I mean, the Buddha and his parinirvana died right in front of everybody, and there was a whole crowd of people there. And how, I don't know, how much more human that is, how much more we can then learn, because I think it is a very profound teaching there. So I was pleased. It was not an easy thing to do, but it was. But it was sweet. It was very sweet. Yeah.
When Kevin died at the age of 39, and a very tumultuous, tragic death, Kyogen said something to me on the telephone that was incredibly simple, incredibly direct, but when I thought about it later, it was very radical. I was just spinning in all of my grief and pain and angst and shock and anger and embarrassment and bitterness and whatever. And he said to me, turn toward it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how radical that is. Because you think about the counsel and the advice that we typically give people in times of great pain, right? Which is, don't be alone. Make sure that you're around other people. Or get up and get out and go do things. Mm-hmm. Or reflect on all the great times and all the great memories and kind of relish all of that. None of that was his counsel. None of it. Nothing distracting, nothing to fill it up, nothing to keep me busy.
Right.
Nothing except turn toward it.
Yeah.
And it was incredibly painful. Yeah. But and so simple, but it just so radical.
Yeah.
And so I've thought a lot about that, obviously, in the last 10 days. Is just to turn toward it.
That is our practice, to see clearly and to accept things as they are and to respond appropriately, to come from inside, that's in a place that's real. So, thank you. I think we're about out of time here. So. I'll see. I have to do something. Okay.
universe throughout space and time. All honor ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond.